quickly is just giving you my life history in the area and then tying in what I remember took place in the area or what was here. So I was born, in 1932 in a house which is just up the road, probably on the site where Vito's restaurant is now. And my father owned a garage and an Irving gas station, which would have been one of the first gas stations in the area. And he operated that for many years. And the that would be on the site where Emerson Pool is now, formerly Follett's Hardware Store. And before that, the garage was converted into a grocery store. And I just forget the name of the people who had the grocery store, but some of you may remember. And at that time, there were many relatives around. I guess the old-timers, you know, you tended to settle in with your relatives. So I remember my grandmother and grandfather very well. And my great-grandmother and great-grandfather lived in a house now on the, which was on the Clark Road, which would be where the Deluxe Fish and Chips building is, somewhere in that area. And my great-great-grandfather, whose name was Alec Dobbin, owned a large tract of land which ran from where KV Rentals is now up over the hill, a large tract of land. And then that was passed on to his son, which would have been Sandy Dobbin, Sandy and Eileen Dobbin. And Sandy was the garbage collector for the town of Rossay, and he had a sled, or sloven, I guess they called them, low slung, team of horses, and he would go down through Rossay, pick up the garbage. And in those days, it was into a dump, and the dump was down at the foot of Dobbin Street, down where those apartment buildings are now. And interestingly enough, their children would be two girls, Sandra and Doreen. I think her name is Doreen, but certainly Sandra. They were the daughters of Sandy Dobbin. And they, Sandra married Pat Shea Sr., who was still around here. So my in-laws and outlaws are mixed up in there somewhere. So if you go back far enough, Pat Shea's wife is probably some relative of mine. And what was Rossay like in those days? Well, it was residential, of course, and a lot of summer homes. The main road going by here was not paved. I remember vaguely, because I would have been six or seven, I suppose, the road being paved. I don't know how far up it went in those days, but the Clark Road and Meyer Road, of course, were not paved. They were gravel. Ye Comfy Cabins were certainly in vogue. They were built around 1920, and they were owned by, again, another relative, Harold and Inus Breen, I believe the name was. Then there were another set of cabins almost directly across the street. Hatfield owned them, and they were called Hat's Cabins. And the common, no
relation,
as I...
No relation to Norm or anything?
No, no. And the common, as I remember, hasn't changed from the day I was born till today. It's sort of sacred territory. Rossay Common, I remember quite vividly as being the Kennedy House run by Arthur Kennedy and his wife, and she was an excellent cook, so all the fellows my age were great friends of Bud Kennedy, the son, and we would call in there for cookies in the afternoon after playing baseball or something. And Arthur also ran a garage down behind the Kennedy House and a service station. And Mr. Kennedy would be a relative of John Steele, and that's where you get the Kennedy Steele Park that we have. Also at Rossi Corner, there were two grocery stores, one the Lou Merritt, as I knew it, and Mr. Daigle. And Mr. Daigle was a great, tall Englishman with a bar, handlebars of a mustache, and never seemed to be very much in the store, but people went there. And then, of course, you know what took place after Lou Merritt was... Who was the next one, Barry, after Merritt?
Ham, I think.
Hams, yeah. And then and Sobeys.
Can I ask you a question about Mr. Daigle? I think it was Gordon Fairweather recalled that he had three colors of hair, red, black, and white for his hair. Does that...
I don't remember that.
I mean, it's a wonderful story, but nobody else remembers
He was famous for his penny candy. Our kids grew up.
Okay. No, and I don't remember any of that. I do remember him being very tall and very broad and a big...
With a bowler hat.
And a bowler hat, exactly.
And a white coat.
Yeah.
His two daughters are still alive, but I don't know if they can remember too much now.
Okay. Then in Fairvale, as I was talking to you earlier, there was a McIlwain store just under the underpass on the left-hand side, just at the entrance going down to
River Road.
Mm-hmm. And then at the top of the hill, George B.A., you remember George B.A., principal at Simon's Junior School? His parents ran a small grocery store at the top of that hill.
He was my first principal.
Pardon?
He was my first principal.
Was he? And then down where the Bank of Nova Scotia is now, I remember very vividly, it was a meat market owned by a family by the name of Dixon. And it was a traditional old meat market with the sawdust on the floor. And interestingly enough, he lived close by to me at the corner of Hampton Road and Clark Road, right at the corner. And there was he kept a large part of the area wired off in a chicken coop. And I remember in those days when you killed the chickens or hens, it was a chopping block, grab the hen with a hatchet, and boom. And occasionally it didn't get the right spot and the hen would be flying all over the place, blood flying and so on. Also, old Dr. Peters was the only doctor I remember around at that time, and Peters Lane is named after him. If you had have your appendix out or a tooth pulled, just go over to Dr. Peters. He had everything right there in his house.
I don't think he did appendix there. Though.
What?
I don't think he did appendix.
You don't think so?
Not in the house.
Not in the house, but teeth and anything.
Yeah, you did that.
Yeah. Also, there were two service stations at Rossi Corner at that time, the one behind the Kennedy House, and then right across from the Rossi Park School was the Clarence Brown service station. And there's a valid reason why that ground is polluted, because in those days you go in for an oil change.
It went out back.
And they just take it out back and dump it. So,
Was it an SO then, Bill?
It was Esso, and then it turned when Burns took it over, and then it became a metro station.
But it started as an Esso.
Petro-Canada. Scribner's had it for a while.
Yeah. First?
It was Petro-Canada.
No, Scribner.
Brown's first,
yeah,
and then...
I think, I don't know...
Yeah, Scribner was at the Irving.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, that was Carpenter. Yeah.
Carps.
Scribner was at the
Wendell Carpenter.
And then Cork.
Wendell Carpenter.
Yeah. Scribner, Roy and Scribner were the...
Rossi Consolidated School, as it was known in those days, was a it was the only school between St. John and Hampton. My mother went to Rossi Consolidated School. I attended Rossi Consolidated School, and my two kids, Andrew and Lorna, went to Rossi Consolidated School.
What was your mom's name, Bill?
Her name was Dorothy. She was a Coates.
Dorothy Coates. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And my grandmother and grandfather and her side were Bill Coates and Dorothy Coates. Also, some of you will remember where the gymnasium was added to Rossi Consolidated School. There was a long wood building, and at the front was a barbershop with Murray Howarth. They used to call him Spitting Murray. It took a real danger getting a haircut if there was a card game going on, as there usually was. He'd be cutting your hair and watching the card game, so a little dangerous. And then they had the
good
fire
lifesavers.
The what?
Yeah, good lifesavers.
Yeah.
The kids.
And the fire station was also in that building, and in those days it was all volunteer, and they had a siren signal. So, three blasts of the siren meant that the fire was on Rosse Hill or blast and a half, and it was up the Gondola Point Road. So the volunteers knew which area to go to. It didn't pinpoint the house.
Who was the chief then, chief?
And it was also,
that's great.
Pardon?
They just asked who the chief was, but it depends on what year you're talking about. So
yeah.
It was
also used as a bus storage for the school bus. And the school bus was driven by, my father was the first school bus driver, and he would make the rounds. And then at the upper end, on the Chamberlain Road, he would meet his brother, my Uncle Harold, would be bringing the kids in from the Chamberlain Road on horse and wagon. And interestingly enough, Harold's son, Lee, became a school principal, and my father, Fred, I became a school principal. So,
in your genes.
And
I mean, hereditary type of thing that passed down.
The genes passed
on. How many
on.
Children were you, Bill?
I'm the eldest of 10.
Oh, not even Catholic.
Pardon? And not a Catholic.
What's wrong with that picture?
And just as an aside on that.
There wasn't any birth control pills.
When people say, you know, when I was at high school and some kid would say, oh, I don't have enough money for this, I don't have enough money for that. And I said, look, kid, you don't know what being poor is. And I make no apology for it. But when you're the eldest of 10 and your father is a bus driver, I'm telling you,
wasn't a lot left over.
Times were tough.
Yeah.
We never, my father was always a great worker, and my mother is still a marvel at how she fed 10 kids. But anyway, we never suffered lack of food, and we're all still around. Well, not we lost a sister and a brother, but the rest of us are all still around the area and have all been quite successful in the community.
So Lee Bishop is your first cousin?
Yes.
Yeah. And Bill, sorry, when you talked about the fire department, the horns, what years would that be?
That would have been in the late 30s, early 40s.
Okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
Do you remember hearing them?
No.
You were deaf then, too?
No.
You were there, OJ.
I was still in high school.
The other thing, of course, which hasn't changed, is that there was always a rink on the common, and there was always somebody, Eddie Clinch or Jiggs Miller. There was always somebody who
George Dobbin ran for years.
Looked after it. Who?
George Dobbin.
Yes, yeah. And that was pretty important to the area because there was a CNR hockey league, and teams from Brookville, Torreyburn, Renforth, Rossi, and Fairvale all played there in a league. And then, of course, in those days, there was the Rossi Collegiate School and Netherwood, and students who went there were in uniform. The RCS were in a dark cadet uniform, and the girls, of course, the green. And there were always church parades. Every Sunday, they'd parade from the schools up to St. Paul's. And I also recall and remember the old Rossi names, you know, Mackay, Hugh Mackay, who was the leader of the PC party in New Brunswick. the Fairweathers and the Streeters and the Stetsons and the Crosbys of Crosby's Molasses. And I remember
Turnbulls.
Most of them because I...
Turnbulls, yeah.
Pardon?
Turnbulls.
And the Turnbulls, yes.
Baxter.
Did
I remember,
they live there permanently?
Pardon?
Was this still summer home area?
No, they were permanent.
Permanent?
Yeah. I remember them all because I caddied for them all at Riverside.
What was the population of Rossing then at that stage?
1,000.
Small.
Yeah. But it never got more than 1,000, but...
No, in those days it wasn't up there either.
500?
Because there was no, nothing up here. It was a Moosehead farm, or Moosehorn farm was where the town hall is up beyond here. So up until the early 40s I was around here, and then our family moved to Brookville, and we lived on the other side of the tracks, literally and figuratively. We lived in by the Brookville lime quarry. And as I said earlier, being the eldest of 10, I still remember the rent that was paid. It was $10 a month for the house we lived in.
Mm-hmm.
The house wasn't much, but that was the rent that we paid.
So, Bill, was it common to move, I mean, with a large family like that? Or?
No, we moved because the war came on, mm-hmm. and my father got a job with SMT.
Oh, okay.
So he wanted to move closer to his work. So we went to Glen Falls School, and you know, they talk about flooding today. There was flooding in those days as well, because where the motel at Park Plaza Motel is, that would flood every winter, and that would be, we'd take our skates to school and skate there. And then came time for high school, and I went to St. John High by train. The train ran from Sussex to St. John, picking up people who worked in the city. Some students went into town, and it was the milk train. Thus, you know, you hear the old milk run. Well, they picked up milk from the farmers along each station.
Now, is that different from the jitney? I can't.
The jitney came later when the population decreased. But the train was a train with several cars. On it.
The milk run.
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Bill, what was the price of the 50-ride ticket on the railroad? Remember?
Why would you ask me that? Because
we would
buy the ticket, which wasn't very much, but coming out from town, we always made a beeline for the last car, and most days the conductor didn't get to us. So the
save that ticket.
So the ticket lasted a long time. Another, you know, being frugal. I always say that, you know, I could survive today if my money disappeared, but I'm not so sure that my kids could. Because, you know, I've gone through this.
You were streetwise.
Yeah. Oh, streetwise, I guess so. Oh, another thing that was interesting, when I attended the, I think, grade 8 at Glen Falls School, and then high school in those days was 9, 10, 11.
Yep.
So I would get on the bus to go up, because my father worked there, so they knew me. So I would board the bus at Glen Falls and throw papers off to all of the houses from Torreyburn up to Gondola Point, up where the ferry is, and turn around and come back, and I'd get off at my house. And I got 25 cents a day for that from the bus driver.
No wonder you're comfortable today.
Was the quarry in operation when you moved down there, Bill?
The quarry?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And
it had been established a long time before that.
Yeah. I remember the foreman, one was Mr. Ike Wally, who, the house that the Dreyer family moved into down there where they're doing the new road that has clay, just this side of Paul's flower shop. He was the foreman, and then somebody who lived beside us in Brookville by the name of Hans Hansen was another foreman. And it was owned by Mr. Adams. And he owns the house, or owned the house, at the, when you come out Drury Cove Road and you look up to the stone house, well, that was...
I call that the castle.
Yeah. That was Adams, Mr. Adams, Harold Adams' house.
Okay.
Then I move along to my next phase in life. After I graduated from high school, I worked for a year or so at the Bank of Nova Scotia at Haymarket Square. And that won't be in your book and so on, but there was a Bank of Nova Scotia, Bank of Montreal, and Likely's lumber yard. And they would they would creosote everything, and that's why that whole place is polluted now. And then they were about to move me in out of the bank, so I decided I didn't want to move anywhere. So a minister who had a very profound influence on my life, Russell Alcorn, was the minister at Brookville United Church. And he suggested or asked, have you ever considered university? And I said, well, no, I haven't really. So to make a long story short, off I go to Mount Allison, having worked in the bank, and in those days the bank paid you peanuts as well. So I survived until Christmas, and then I didn't have any money. So I went to see the president, who was Ross Flemington, mm-hmm. whom we knew as Ross the Boss. And I said, Dr. Flemington, I don't have any money for the second term. Well, have you got a job in the summer? I said, well, I think I can get a job in the summer. So I was there a second term on the university, and I would pay. So I was always a half a year behind. Can't do that today.
How did you know this Ross? Pardon my ignorance, Bill. How did you know Ross, the boss? Who was he?
He was the president of the university.
But you said he was known as Ross. Just at the it was a
well,
nickname at the university.
Everybody, all the kids called
oh,
him
I
Ross the boss.
Oh, I
yeah.
see.
Yeah.
Except to his face.
Pardon?
Except to his face, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, interestingly enough, after I graduated from Mount A with a BA and a BED, I didn't have a job. So you'd graduate in the spring. And I was playing golf, and in those days I was really sharp. And Bud Kennedy and I and a few others, we would always play for money. And I managed to win enough money to keep myself going during the summer. But, of course, the winter's coming. The winter's coming, and
this isn't in the book.
And I saw this ad in the paper.
He went professional.
Saw this ad in the paper, principal of Norton School. So I, not knowing any better, applied. And I think the letter got there at 2 o'clock on the Monday, and at 5 o'clock the whole school board came down to meet me coming off the golf course at Riverside. Because here I was, you know, a guy with 2 degrees and didn't have a job, and I was warm, so they hired me. And they said, well, this is the salary that you will get. And I said, look, I can make playing golf and doing other things in the summer, or in the winter. And so they said, well, that's it. So they went away, and they called the next day saying, we forgot to add the government grant.
Yeah.
In those days, it was a government grant.
Yeah.
So that was enough to convince me maybe I should take it. So
probably another $800 or $900.
Not very much, but
yeah.
enough. So this was in Norton. I'm living in Brookville at the time.
Going on the train.
So I borrow money to buy an old car. And every day I travel back and forth to Norton, and the Mackay Highway was just being built, so I never did get a chance to go in it.
So what year was that? Because people disagree.
Well, this was 1957, fall of 57.
Okay. That's in the middle of, I've heard 53, and somebody else said
no,
earlier.
No,
so 57.
No.
Okay.
I think it was after we arrived here.
I would have driven up on the fat road.
How long did it take, Bill? How long did it take?
It would take about 3/4 of an hour. Yeah. Not as much traffic in those days,
yeah.
And I was probably a little heavy on the foot.
There's only two lanes, too.
Gas for 50 cents a gallon, too.
And when I got there, I found that all the other teachers were veterans, and here was this young
local license.
No, I had a teacher's license, but
no, the others though.
Oh, yeah, various degrees.
no degrees.
In one room, I had grades 8, 9, and 10. No, and that 9, 10, and 11 because they had moved to grade 12. All subjects.
Yeah.
So it would be like a room like this, give you 2 minutes on algebra and another 3 minutes on history and so on. It was a zoo. But there is one interesting story. I don't want to keep you too long, but there was one interesting story up there. One kid was really getting on my nerves, and he was rocking back and forth like this. And so I came down, and he was ignoring me, and I just flipped him. And he went ass over kettle, as they say. And came up with the fists. And I said, uh-oh. Yeah. I said, you better make it a good one because you'll only have one chance. And he looked at me and he backed down. Years later, in 1974, when KV High School was being built, and I was hired in the planning stages, I walk in and here's this guy. And I said, you're Lenny Howren. Yes, and you're Mr. Bishop. That was the guy. He went on, became a successful electrician, and so he must have learned something that year. One of the things I must tell you is that along the way I had a lot of help by people who. For one reason or another, looked after me, including, as I said, the Minister Russell Alcorn. And when I went to Mount A, I still remember a Mrs. Hayes, who lived down at the entrance to K Park, was a friend of the family and went to our church, would send me $5 in the mail a couple of times a year, and that was. Wasn't big money, but when you're at university and you need a little money for something, it arrived. And a lot of people that I played golf with also helped me along the line. So I guess that's why I had a dedication to give something back. And so I'm the second oldest or second in years of service as far as municipal politics is concerned. And the other one is the mayor of Atholville.
Yes.
I think, yeah. So I've been in.
For New Brunswick.
How many
for
years?
New Brunswick, yeah.
Yeah, how many years?
39.
Wow.
Including the old East Riverside oldest Council and Rosse Council and so on. And, and then I've been. President of the Mount Allison Alumni. I was on the Board of Regents for 2 terms, which would be 8 years. I was chairman of the Police Commission, Fire Board, Rossi Arena, president of East Riverside Country Club. I guess that's about it. Pardon?
Weren't you on the fire? No, you were in the library.
Yeah, I wasn't chairman of the library. I've been on the library board. But
what did you earn, Bill, when you started teaching? You remember the
I think it was $3,300.
Ooh, big bucks.
That sounds like a lot.
I started for $3,000, I think.
And after then I moved back to Rossi, and that's when things started to really boom out here. Scott Brothers built all these houses up here in the hill and Highland Avenue and all those areas. And when I opened Kiwi High School in 1975, they closed Rossi High School and they closed Hampton High School. So it was just the one high school. And we had 625 students the first year. Then when I retired, I had over 1,800 at Kiwi. And then they built Rossi High School and Hampton High School again. And I think KV now is around 1,100 or 1,200 in the school in Hampton. So area has certainly grown, but
fastest in New Brunswick, isn't it? Education wise?
Yes. Well, the Quispamsis is the fastest growing community in the province. And Rossi Common is still Rossi Common, and some of the old Rossi names are still there.
Do you remember the cows on that common?
No.
Well, that's okay.
But
John Seal was saying that
Mrs.
They used to drive the cattle down to the
Mrs. Groom. Now Groom.
Yeah, Groom is
the
Groom.
She remembers. She's 93 and still driving, I think.
Oh. Touch briefly on the golf club and your golf adventure.
Well, I was very competitive, and I was able to become a reasonably good golfer. I won the provincial amateur championship twice. I won the senior championship of New Brunswick, and I've represented the province on interprovincial teams 7 or 8 times. I won the Maritime Senior Championship 8 times, which is a record. But I still enjoy playing, and I'm still competitive.
Tell us about the club.
The what?
What was it like when you were 15? When you were caddying?
Yeah, I was caddying there, and interestingly enough, today, Saturday morning is the busiest time, as you know, at the club. You can hardly get a starting time. But in those days, no one played Saturday morning because everybody worked. And we always used to judge people who would arrive at 11:30 or 11:45. Well, they really got it made. They are getting off early. And I caddied for old Victor Crosby. And I asked, do you remember Victor? Yeah. And Harold Stetson. And
who else does in your day there? John Steele?
Well, John Steele was... John Steele, we had a conversation the other day, John and I. He is older than I am, but he... and he's been a member longer, but I'm pretty close to him in terms of years of being a member, because he was away during the war. And then he took several years off when his kids were growing up. But I think he still has me by a couple of years.
I have one little thing to say. I'm going to tell on Mr. Bishop. He taught me. I was the one of those ones that tried his patience. That was in Simons High School. You taught me grade 11 and 12. And I remember one day he said, Nita, turn around and shut up.
I wouldn't do that, would I? No.
Did she?
Verbal abuse.
I did have a Rhodes Scholar at Simons High School. His name was Kirstedt. His father was Judge Kirstedt.
Oh, Richard.
And Gordon would do nothing wrong. I mean, he had perfect attendance. Excellent marks, of course, if he went on to be a Rhodes Scholar. But the last day of school in his graduating year, the kids goaded him into taking the afternoon off. Well, then he had to come back to get the bus. And who would be standing in the doorway but Bill Bishop? Looked at him, and he turned beet red. And I said, Gordon, get going. Get going. But he never forgot it. He
had to be a good athlete, too, to get the Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah, well, he played football at Mount A when he went there. He was not a good athlete in high school, but...
they had to have some reason.
Yeah.
How much did you make as a caddy on 18 holes?
In the old days, it was 35 to 50 cents.
And there was no carts in those days.
No carts in the... I used to carry double, so you would make more money. Yeah. Harden the shoulders.
Wow. Question for Mayor Bill.
Very interesting, Bill.
What started the fire at the golf club?
Pardon?
What started the fire at the golf club?
Well, we've had several fires there. But the,
after they
decided to build a new building, and the reason they did that rather than refurbish the old one, which I thought was a shame because that the old building was a classic building, they wanted curling, so they built the curling with the new club. And before they moved most of the furniture out and so on, but the a lot of the trophies were still in the old building, and some of the caddies got down in the underneath and were smoking, I guess, and that's what started the fire.
1963?
66. 66. We had to evacuate the cars, you know.
The new building was built, Hamish, but they hadn't really moved in. And
I was playing golf that afternoon,
yeah.
And we moved the cars away from the parking lot.
Oh, yeah. That was
the ones that we could get into.
That was a big blaze.
Yeah.
How many years do you have in the teaching racket, Bill?
57 to 90. What's that?
33.
How many?
33.
Yeah, I guess 34, I guess.
Bill, many thanks for
being
here.
Thank you, Bill.
Bill, thank you for being a professional golfer.
Bill,